Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on this Tuesday, July the 27th, 2021, 7/27/21. 14 coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, the last Tuesday in the month of July. How about that? How time flies. Don't forget, today we have the Adam the Computer Guy show today from 2:10 until 3 p.m. And then Voice of a People with Linda Sims will be on today from 4:10 p.m. until 5 p.m. So all kinds of great programming right here on WWGH Radio. Don't forget, you can listen live on the webpage, WWGH1071.com. Also, program archives there dating back to January of 2016. Or you can download the free TuneIn app, absolutely free, on any mobile device and listen to WWGH Radio anywhere in the world. How about that? Technology allows you to listen anywhere in the world through the TuneIn app. Just download it from any app store. It is absolutely free. All right, and away we go here on this Tuesday morning. Mary, our big winner last hour, a pair of tickets to Zumbezi Bay, which she can pick up today between 4 and 5. Also, we have other winners here, and if you would like to pick up your tickets today, you can do that between 4 and 5 here at the station. It's hard to believe the month of July is almost gone. You know, I remember, here we were in late May, school was just about to let out. All these restrictions were being lifted. We went into the Vax-a-Million contest, and now here we are in late July, almost into the month of August, and in August, a lot of the kids will go back to school. Now, how that's all going to shake out, we really don't know at this particular point, but hopefully, it all shakes out well. All right, I believe we're going to be joined by a guest here momentarily. So while we wait for that, let me remind you that there's going to be a benefit for Alice Renee Hildreth, Saturday, August 14th, 1 p.m., open-ended event. $10 donation at the door, 5 and under are free. It's going to be a spaghetti dinner, garlic bread, salad, 2 dressings. There'll be an auction, Chinese raffle, bake sale, 50-50 raffle, and much more. Poker run is scheduled for July 31st. Alice Renee was recently diagnosed with stage 1 invasive ductal carcinoma, breast cancer. Renee has opted to undergo a bilateral mastectomy with reconstructive surgery due to a long family history of cancer. As some of you may remember, she lost her mother in May of 2014 to stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. Her middle sister is a breast cancer survivor in remission, and her father passed away in 1985 at the age of 80. All donations are accepted. You may contact Renee's Rack Pack on Facebook. But it's a benefit for Alice Renee Hildreth, Saturday, August 14th, starting at 1 p.m. It's a spaghetti dinner here in Marion. So that is a great, great thing. Now, last month, because of conflicting schedules, we did not get a chance to visit with the mayor of Marion, Scott Schertzer. So glad to have him back on this morning. He visits with us normally the last Tuesday of the month from 9:10 a.m. until 10 a.m. Lots to talk about in the last 2 months, so it's always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones for the remainder of the hour the mayor of the city of Marion, Scott Schertzer. Mayor, how are you?
I am fine, thank you, and good morning to you and your listeners. Last month was just strange. I really don't know what happened last month, so but we'll get back on our regular schedule and our regular calls so we can talk about some of the issues that are taking place in our community. Scott, thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. Just want to start off here kind of wide today. What's going on in Marion? What's new that the listeners might need to know?
Well, you know, it's been a very good summer. We're dealing with some things in city government right now. The ARPA money is starting to get freed up to the political subdivisions. That was a bill passed by Congress, I want to say, in the very early stages of the congressional session this year. I don't know if it was February or March, but that money is starting to come to the city of Marion. And we're going to get that in two lump sums. We're going to get half this year and half next year. Of course, unfortunately, we're not going to get as much as they originally told us that we were going to get because the state kind of reallocated the monies that municipal governments were going to receive, the non-entitlement communities. And, of course, we are a non-entitlement community. That money did not impact the Columbuses and the Clevelands, the Daytons, the bigger metropolitan areas, but the Mansfields, the Marions, the Limas, the Finleys, they basically cut our ARPA funding in half to share it with the township government. But we did get our first allocation, and we went to council last night and asked that it be appropriated, because that's what we have to do first, is appropriate the money and put it in a line item in the budget. And council had some questions, but they didn't ask questions. So we're going back to finance committee next week and see if they actually have questions that we can answer. We are restricted on how we can spend that money through the United States Department of the Treasury. So it's not just like spending it on, you know, fuel consumption or you know, there are things that we can do, there are things that we can't do, and we will follow the Treasury Department guidelines on that $1.8 million. I'm sorry, go ahead. I sense a question there.
Yeah, the question, is there any ideas come up about where this money will be spent?
Well, yes, of course, my senior staff and I have discussed it. You can, a legitimate qualifiable expense is the reimbursement of salary and benefits for police officers and firefighters. So that is something that we definitely want to do, is reimburse ourselves for their expenses. Now, of course, it's not the entire police department or the entire fire department. It's salary and benefits for specific firefighters that run EMS calls and specific police officers. But that's a good thing, because what that does when we reimburse ourselves in this year's budget, it frees up that money that we would have spent and budgeted for, which allows us to do other things. And that was a topic that came up on council last night, and I'm kind of scratching my head saying, yeah, that's what ARPA's for. It's to help us out, to give us an opportunity to do things that we might not have ordinarily have been able to do, whether it's buy a new police cruiser, whether it's hire another police officer, because the administration in Washington came out and said that ARPA money, a qualifiable expense, is for law enforcement. So the police chief came to me and said, we're getting ready to hire two officers because they're going to fill vacancies in retirements. Then we have two officers that are going to retire in the second half of this year, so we want to replace them now and not wait until they retire. And by the way, how about a net new police officer? And so we looked at the budget, we looked at the COPS grant that we have, and we had to make sure that the auditor's office was drawing down quarterly on the COPS grant because it pays for three police officers. And I said, we're in good financial situation because of the ARPA money. I said, yes, let's hire a net new officer. But then we found out that the auditor's office was not drawing down on the federal grant that funds the police officers. So we had a meeting last week, and we got things sorted out, and we're going to start drawing down on that grant, because if you don't draw down on the grants, that means your salary line item in that department will come up short in the fourth quarter of this year, and we're going to have to ask for additional appropriations. Well, that's where the ARPA money comes in, but we need to draw down on that COPS grant. So there's all these things going on, a lot of moving parts. And council, there's four or five council members that are in their first term. They've never seen so much money come at them before. And I'm happy and willing to answer all their questions, but they got to ask the question. And also, we just got a federal aviation grant that we did not expect. A couple weeks ago, we got a call from Senator Rob Portman's office that the Marion Municipal Airport was going to receive $1.8 million. And again, this was money that we weren't anticipating. We did have a couple projects in the can, already designed, already specced and bid. We knew we were going to do them, but now the federal government is going to pay 100% of these projects at the airport. And a lot of it has to do with runway rehab, and we have a very antiquated lighting system out there. And of course, if you know anything about aviation, the lights and the different colors and different positions of the lights as you're trying to land are very important to a pilot. So now we're going to go to a modern LED lighting system out there, which will be much better. That'll be fully paid for by the federal government.
Since your meeting with the auditor's office, do you know why the grant was not being drawn down on?
Well, that's a very good question, and I do not know exactly why. I know that there has been some personnel changes over in that office, and that's fine. I do understand that. Personnel changes happen all the time. But just because there's a personnel change does not mean that the auditor shouldn't be on top of something that is so important, like the federal grants that fund police officers, firefighters, and then we have a large court grant as well.
If you follow, obviously, the media, and we did not get a chance to talk last month, so some of this is about a month old at this point, but Marion received a penalty from the mispayment by the auditor's office to the state. Now, I think I have this number right, $66,217.34, and that would not be the only penalty. That's just the first penalty that has come. Now, our understanding from the auditor is that hasn't been paid, that they're still trying to get forgiveness on that. What's the story on that $66,000?
Well, I thank you for the question. I think it's a great question. Even last night on City Council, I believe it was a member of the Finance Committee asked if there was an update on any further penalties. And actually, the deputy auditor said that, yes, they did receive penalties for the first quarter of this year. So we're still waiting on penalties from the fourth quarter of last year. So I think the grand total now is over $80,000, and I'll be honest with you, and I'm a little concerned that I really don't know where we are on this. This is an auditor issue. I think that the Finance Committee should ask some very pointed questions of the auditor about these penalties and where we are and trying to get them reduced and how that process works. I've never been a part of anything like this before in my tenure as mayor, and I'll be honest with you, I don't want to be a part of anything like this ever again.
$80,000 for people listening, and obviously the penalties are not done yet. There's still a fourth quarter. What does $80,000 mean to the budget of Marion that didn't have to come out?
Well, it means, let me just put it to you this way. That means we could have hired an additional police officer or firefighter. And if the third quarter last year was $66,000, that's reasonable to think that the fourth quarter penalties could also be $66,000. So we could be talking one police officer and one firefighter.
You know, Mayor, when this all started, no penalties financially had been doled out. When at this point we're talking about 80,000, could be talking anywhere in the neighborhood of $140,000 just in penalties. What does somebody in city government do at this point? I mean, we've talked about resignations, we've talked about investigations, we've talked about all that. But now that the financial penalties are coming here, what's the feeling?
Well, the feeling is now my administration has to verify, check, and confirm a number of different things. I mentioned the federal grants. That's something that we continue to verify, check, and confirm. And these are things that I never had to do in the first 12 years that I was in office. I never had to be concerned about these types of issues before. And so that's where we are. That's why I had that meeting last Wednesday with the auditor, the two deputy auditors, the city treasurer, my senior staff, and two members of the finance committee were present at that meeting to find out why we're not drawing down on four different federal grants that fund three police officers, six firefighters, and 1.5 employees in the Marion Municipal Court. We go after those grants with the intention of keeping our safety forces at a level that we want to. And whenever we can add additional safety forces, that's something that we're going to do. And that's what I wanted to do with the one net new officer with the ARPA money that we asked council to appropriate last night.
And I don't want to spend too much time on this because we've talked quite a bit, but I do think the community is interested, who's listening. $80,000 in fines, the mispayment of over $1 million to the wrong government office, the gift card scam of thousands of dollars using the city credit card, all of these things that have happened. And now we learn about the drawing down of the grants, which hopefully has been remedied. The people want to know, do we have a competent auditor? Is there somebody, because we hear a lot that that is not a position that the mayor hires. That is an elected position. The mayor is not the auditor's boss. But do we have a competent person doing that job? Because they are elected.
Well, again, another very good question, Scott, and that's what I like so much about our interviews is I have no idea what questions you're going to ask me. There's nothing prepared here.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
The Finance Committee has some oversight over the auditor's office, but not over the position of the elected auditor. In my mind, and I do believe that we talked about this 2 months ago, it is the voters that should make the decision on the competency of our elected officials. And in this case, we are talking about the auditor. Now, the auditor's not up for re-election this year. City council's up for re-election. So when you go in to vote, make sure that you're voting for well-informed, competent individuals to hold those offices that have some understanding of how municipal government works. You know, I have spent my entire career as mayor trying to make city government more efficient and smaller by merging boards and commissions and by sharing duties and responsibilities and like services with the township and the counties with the combined dispatch and combined health departments. So it's really going to come down to the voters. And so whenever a person runs for public office, you need to look back at what they have done if they're already in office to determine whether you want to keep that person in office.
Do you feel comfortable with this person in office?
I feel now like I have to verify and confirm things so the city does not get itself in a position where we're asking the federal government to allow us to file the paperwork for a first quarter reimbursement earlier this year or a fourth quarter reimbursement from last year because they didn't file the paperwork in a timely manner.
Should the citizens of Marion at this point have worry about who's running that office based on their track record at this point?
Well, I think the citizens of Marion should always be in tune to what their elected officials are doing. And let me just say, make sure you get both sides of the story. You're getting my side of the story. I'm quite confident and sure, I should say, that the auditor has his side of the story. You know, his reason for not drawing down on the grants was changing of personnel. I get it. But those grants still need to be drawn down on, and you are, wasn't it Harry Truman that said that the buck stops here? Well, the buck's just run through the plate glass window. Who's in charge of the auditor's office? I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting question. And again, Robert Landon has been invited on this program, and he's still invited on this program. Anytime he would like to come, he is more than welcome to come. Just to tie a knot in this portion of the program this morning, do you feel, based on his track record, that he's doing a competent job?
Let me put it to you this way. I think the auditor's office and the elected auditor could do a much better job than what they're doing. And as I have said publicly, council meetings, I have said privately to him, and I have said on this program that my administration has a wealth of institutional knowledge and competent people that can assist, but we're not here to do his job that he was elected to do. And I will preface that by saying the deputy auditor often comes to members of my administration as well as myself and says, what do you think about this? Or how does this work? Or traditionally, what has been done here? We don't tell them what to do, but we can advise them on best practices that we have seen in my tenure as mayor.
Do you know, that's an interesting point. I don't think that point's ever been made, that the deputy auditor does come to your office and staff and ask questions, but the auditor does not. Do you know why that is?
I don't, but I will say that the previous auditor and I met monthly for a regularly scheduled meeting. And sometimes those meetings lasted 10 minutes and we just said, how are the kids doing? Because everything was running smooth. This auditor and I are now on a regular monthly scheduled meeting. And I often have questions about some of the things that we have talked about. But what I haven't gotten in return is, what is he doing to remedy the situation? Or why has a policy change happened? Now, look, he has a right to change policies within his office, and I would not take that away from him. But when those policy changes impact departments that I'm in charge of, there's a professional courtesy involved to let us know and the director and or the department head of those policy changes that he makes to inform them of what is going on. And then giving us an opportunity to discuss it and look at it and say, is this the best practice? If it is, okay, that's his prerogative. I get it.
It's an interesting thing because I think people wonder, what is the relationship at this point? Is it friendly enough to say, how are the kids and this sort of thing? Or is it, why don't answers come, I guess? Why aren't questions like that asked?
You know, I think in life in general, well, in our professions, I think relationship building is always important. And yes, he and I do have those conversations in our meetings. It's not strictly about the auditor's office. We do talk about things such as, how are the kids? That's an example, maybe not an accurate depiction, but those types of things. So yes, we have discussed those things before, and that's part of the relationship building. But one has to, both parties have to want to actually build that relationship to make it stronger, to build trust in one another. Not everything is political. I just told somebody this morning, that I have never in my 10-year in municipal government as mayor or a councilman seen such a heightened politicalization of every issue. Not every issue has to be political. Not every issue should be political. Hiring a new police officer can be political, but everybody should be on board with hiring a new police officer with the ARPA money. But council did not want to appropriate the ARPA money last night. Is that political? Is it hyper-political? I suspect it is.
Well, you know, Mayor, this brings up a bigger point that you know, people who read the newspaper, people who listen to the radio, and people who stay in tune on the internet have. And, you know, the auditor releases press releases that usually at some point mention this is a political witch hunt, something of that nature. We look at the votes on city council for many things, and they are right down party lines. Councilman Josh Daniels says he was leaving the Democratic Party. Now I guess he's not running for re-election at all this year, a former Democrat. Last night you're talking about the ARPA money. What happened? Why are we so political? Why would a police officer not want to be hired based in politics, as you just said?
Well, that maybe is a question for members of city council. If you look up at the political makeup of council, we actually have two independents, and never have I seen two independents on city council. Yes, Josh was a D, and now he's an independent, and I appreciate and respect that. But the 6th ward council member was elected as an independent. Then you've got 3 Democrats, and then you've got 4 Republicans. So, you know, actually the Republicans, an elected councilman with an R behind their name, they have control of council. And they didn't want to appropriate the ARPA money last night.
And the independents, did they fall in that category?
Well, there was never a vote taken. It was part of a larger piece of legislation, an appropriation legislation. What they did is they pulled it out and said, let's discuss it next week at finance. And I'm okay with that. But I would hope that if a council member had a question prior to last night's meeting, because it's already been through committee, it passed out of committee 3-0. If there are questions, they could have and should have been asked and answered before last night, but I am happy and willing, either myself or my staff, to answer the questions that they have. The question is will there be questions, or is this just a political tactic?
What would the political tactics gain be?
Well, I try to stay out of the minds of other people. So I don't know how to answer that question.
No problem. One final question on this, because there are some important things we need to talk about other than that time goes by so fast. The investigation into the auditor was turned over to the state. Do we have any updates on that?
I can only tell you that every year political subdivisions are audited by the state auditor's office, and we are probably somewhere in the middle of that audit, and that's who it was turned over to, a division of the state auditor's office. I have heard no word on that investigation and the concerns that council has asked the state auditor to look at. The normal audit that every political subdivision goes through, the counties go through it, library boards can go through it, park boards, we all go through it. That should be wrapping up sometime after Labor Day weekend into the fall.
Because of where we are in summer, a lot of people are interested, how has the Aquatic Center been doing?
Well, there is no doubt that this year has been a challenge for the Aquatic Center because of the lack of qualified, licensed lifeguards. We were never able to get enough lifeguards hired because of their certifications. So we're only open on Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, and obviously that's weather permitting, so some of those days we had to shut down. For the most part, it's been a good season. I would have loved to have stayed open 7 days a week, but we also know that public pools are not a cash cow, and they should never be built with the expectations that they are going to make money. They should only be built with an expectation that they'll break even. And we've never broken even on our pool, and I don't look for us to break even this year. Last year was the best year we ever had with the Aquatic Center, and we were not even open, so we didn't lose money.
Mm. Last time we spoke was late May. The Vax-a-Million, I don't believe, had taken place yet. It was just about to take place. And during that conversation, I said, is this a good idea? And you said, let's talk when it's over. Vax-a-Million has ended now. And what we saw was Governor DeWine appearing on somebody's lawn in Union County and giving a check. We saw people Skyped into press conferences, and the vaccination rate in Ohio is still below 50%, and in Marion County, lower than that. Was Vax-a-Million a good idea? Was it political? What'd you make of it?
So, what I make of it is you and I are talking to one another today, so neither one of us won.
That's true.
And I've got two daughters going off to state colleges here in the next 3 weeks, and neither one of them won the free tuition for a year. Look, is it political? I suppose everything an elected official can be construed as somewhat political. I don't know that it was the governor's intentions to make this particular issue political, but I can see how his primary opponents and his Democratic opponents might view it that way when the campaign really heats up. Was it successful? I don't believe it had quite the success that they had hoped it would have, but I am not opposed to him in what he did with that. If we got more people vaccinated than we would have if he hadn't have done it, I'm okay with that. I don't know what we have to do to encourage more Ohioans to get vaccinated. I've kind of settled into a position personally myself now that, look, if you don't want to, so be it. But don't criticize me because I did. And don't criticize policymakers and public health officials in the medical community if we end up back where we were last year with mandatory masking, with no fans at sporting events, and schools not opening up like they should be. So let's not blame those who got vaccinated for those types of things if that is the case. Now, I'm not sure we're heading in that direction. I think Ohioans have just come to accept that this is the new normal for now. And I don't think this is the new normal, and I do not like it.
It's very interesting off of that since we spoke last, the restrictions were lifted. Pretty much all restrictions were lifted except for a few places in Ohio. And here we sit at the end of July. We're at a two-month high. The numbers are going up again for COVID. Schools are about to go back in session in less than a month. Columbus City Schools have said they are going to make the kids wear masks. Ohio Health has said we're not going to mandate that for school children. I know flyers are going out, or letters are going out to school districts in Marion saying, would you like your child to learn remotely or be in class 5 days a week? What's the feeling right now as these vaccination points are not going up, and the centers all across the city here in Marion and county don't seem to be getting a lot of signups at this point?
No, that's right, and I don't look for us this year to, in Marion County at least, to go over 50%. And quite frankly, I don't know what that means. From the very onset of this pandemic, I said that I'm going to rely on the public health officials and the medical community, and that's what I've done, and that's what I will continue to do. There is nothing in city government that is closed or restricted. Yes, we do have signs posted in City Hall because it's still the CDC recommendation that if you're not vaccinated, you should be masked. But let's be honest, nobody coming into City Hall is masked right now. And there's no way for us to absolutely verify whether somebody has been vaccinated or not. The senior center was the last thing to be opened. And the governor and his department head that oversees senior centers escapes me at the moment, but have rescinded all restrictions on senior centers. So we're in the process of a full blown open Marion Senior Center here very soon.
Is this something that, as a mayor, as a citizen of Marion, as we all are, are you worried as we head into the fall, the indoor events, the schools back in session, and where we are number-wise right now, does that combination worry you personally?
So a worry may be a little bit of a strong word. I'm definitely concerned about it. I'm concerned for our community, concerned that some of those restrictions that we just spoke of might come back and play. I'm concerned about the overall morale of not only our community, but the state and the country, and the divisiveness that has been created over masks versus non-masks versus vaccinating versus non-vaccinating. We were generally thought to be very considerate, caring society, and I'm not seeing so much of that now when it comes to those two issues. So yes, I am concerned. I'm concerned for you know, every school child that is going to go back in a traditional classroom setting. A lot of the kids here in Marion County are going to be going off to college. As I mentioned, I've got two daughters going off to different state universities. So I'm concerned about that. My wife is a teacher. My brother's a teacher. I'm concerned. Everybody in my orbit has been vaccinated, and I'm grateful that the folks in my immediate orbit have chosen to get vaccinated to protect themselves as well as the rest of our family and friends and such. And I believe it's the right thing to do, but I'm not here to criticize somebody that doesn't believe that they need to be vaccinated.
Want to touch a little bit on what's been going on in the state. We are going to have a governor's race next year. Since we talked last, we now know that Governor DeWine is going to be primaried by Jim Renacci. Nan Whaley seems to be the front runner, although polls aren't being taken this early on the Democratic side, Mayor Nan Whaley of Dayton. But this week, in the last 7 days, we've learned that the First Energy scandal, which people would have to read up on, it's very, a lot of intricacies in that, but it's impacting the governor's race now, as we learned yesterday that the $130,000 that Governor DeWine has received in campaign contributions and John Husted from First Energy was donated to the Boys and Girls Club, the Association of Boys and Girls Club. Governor DeWine says he didn't know anything until late last year about what was going on with that scandal, that now First Energy has paid $250 million, with a B, in fines to avoid criminal prosecution about. What do you make of this? You know, it speaks again to something we've talked about. People don't leave office. Seems to be a lot of stuff going on here in Ohio. What do you make of what's going on the state level?
Well, I think it could be politically devastating for Governor DeWine. And let me just say on the onset that I've always had a good relationship with Governor DeWine, and I appreciate that relationship. But putting on my political hat now, I think it could be devastating. I don't know that he'll lose a primary, but I know the Republican base is not happy with DeWine for a number of different reasons, and some of which that I'm not really familiar with, but I think it could help out Nan Whaley in the fall of next year. And I just find it very hard to believe that the governor knew nothing about the householder scam. It is just too much money in politics for everybody that has an R behind their name in state government not to be aware of it.
That being said, you are our mayor here in Marion, but mayors are getting a lot of attention, maybe that they didn't get before. Here in Ohio, we do have Nan Whaley, the mayor of Dayton, running for governor. Cardi Finkbeiner, who's been mayor in Toledo before, is running again at age 82. Dennis Kucinich is back in Cleveland running for mayor again. He was mayor when he was referred to as the boy mayor. What do you make of mayors kind of hitting the spotlight here in Ohio this political season?
Well, I'll tell you what I see. I see the state legislature stripping mayors of their constitutional duties. And I think that the state legislature should let mayors be mayors as they have traditionally been and let them govern their political subdivisions as opposed to stripping them. This started in the Kasich administration when they stripped away the local government funding from municipal governments. That was devastating to us here in Marion and municipal governments across the state of Ohio at a time when we were in the middle of the worst recession of the 21st century. You don't strip away the local government funding and strip us of that all-important, those dollars. Those dollars were actually created during the Great Depression to assist municipal governments. And Governor Kasich at the time stripped half of that away from municipal governments. Same thing with the ARPA money. We were supposed to here in Marion get $7 million of ARPA money. And then the state legislature decided that they wanted to give money to township governments. It's not that township governments don't deserve it, but why didn't the state take it out of their own pot of money? No, they took it away from municipal governments. And that's why Marion is now around $3 million in ARPA money. So I think that the state legislature has really damaged the ability for mayors to effectively govern the communities that they were elected to govern.
Right now in Ohio, it seems as if the Republican Party, for a lot of reasons we've mentioned, Larry Householder, Governor DeWine, the whole First Energy debacle, primaries, first time a sitting governor has been primaried, I think since the 1930s in Ohio, that it looks pretty good for the Democrats in the gubernatorial race. Not that that means anything at this point, but it looks pretty good. A four-term mayor, former city councilman, have you ever thought about running for governor?
No.
Not even a thought.
As you know, I had an opportunity to run for lieutenant governor, and that was a great honor to be asked by Connie Pillage, who asked me to be on her ticket. I guess that's 3 years ago now. But that was a short-lived campaign because Connie decided that the way the polls looked, that it was best for her ticket, which I was on, to step aside and support Rich Cordray and Betty Sutton. There's a small part of me inside that would have liked to have gone all the way to the primary to let Democratic voters have that choice between Rich and Pillage. And this doesn't take anything away from Rich Cordray. I respect him. I like him. I like Betty Sutton. Betty and I were talking to one another early on in 2017, kind of getting to know each other because I didn't really know her. She didn't know me. We had a meeting or two. We talked. And that's when she was running for governor. And, of course, Rich tapped her to be his running mate for lieutenant governor. So, no, I have no aspirations to be governor. But wish I would have had the opportunity to go to the finish line on the lieutenant governor's race. There will always be that, I wonder what would have happened. You know, Rich probably would have won. Conventional wisdom would have, you know, told me that. But I do enjoy getting out in the state, talking to voters, talking about the issues that are important to them, not issues that are necessarily important to a political party, which is how we see the Republicans govern. They're more loyal to their political party and then they are anything else. I think gerrymandering has seriously damaged the state of Ohio. So I'll be interested to see this fall when the census numbers are finally released, what the House and Senate districts look like with the new state law that was passed that's supposed to make them, I'll just use the term, more fair and more balanced and not so gerrymandered to favor one political party.
Two quick questions here before we run out of time. On that note, would you be interested in being a lieutenant governor candidate again, or have you talked to any of the people running for governor at this time in regard to something of that nature?
No, I have not talked to anybody about that. And I think right now where I am in my tenure as mayor, in my position in life, I've got two daughters going off to school. I like where I am right now. I have enough challenges. We've already talked about those challenges at the top of the show today that I'm grappling with. I would like to square those away. I would like to create a better relationship between myself and members of my administration and the auditor so we have more of a working relationship that benefits the citizens of Marion and not the benefit of an elected official or a political party. So at this point in time, I have no aspirations to be on a ticket for 2022.
Final question here, just because we'd be remiss if we didn't bring it up. It's one of those things that happened since we had not spoken. You were the first, I believe, public official to call on Judge Warner to resign. He did resign in the month of June. A letter was given when he resigned. What did you make of the resignation finally coming and just the letter in general?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think the resignation letter came after he was convicted. So it's kind of a meaningless letter. He would have had to have stepped down anyhow to follow state law. But he's a judge and he knew that. So I think it's a meaningless resignation.
Mayor Scott Schertzer, last Tuesday of every month on this program. Mayor, I appreciate you coming on, and as you said earlier, we never know what we're going to talk about, but I think it informs the city, and that's a big big plus.
Well, thanks so much, Scott, and thank you to your listeners, and continue to have a safe summer out there.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mayor of Marion, Scott Schertzer. All right, for this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Let's go. And you wait in the back door. And we didn't pay any trace of a cost.